This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycast.
The Escape Hour is on Joy. I'm Stefan, and today we're talking all things Australian. So we're going to talk about the great Australian bucket list. Robin Esrock. Robin is a Canadian travel writer, and we're going to go on a journey around Australia with a bucket list of things to do in Australia. So Robin is a best-selling author, journalist, TV host, and public speaker. And Robin's works has appeared in major publications on five continents, such as the National Geographic, Traveller, and many well-known newspaper and TV stations. So Robin, welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you. And you've just published the Great Australian Bucket List, I think, that came out last week, and it's a great read, all things Australian. But originally, I think you're Canadian, and it might even be South African. So how did you end up exploring Australia?
Yes, I'm born and raised in South Africa, but I've been living in Canada for 20 years. I've traveled to 112 countries now on seven continents, looking for unique experiences, things that you can only do in that place and nowhere else. So that's kind of like my beat. A couple of years ago, I wrote a book called The Great Global Bucket List, which were my favorite experiences from around the world. And that book was picked up by a publisher in Australia, and it did very well. And I'd also done a book called The Great Canadian Bucket List, which was my personal investigation into what makes Canada such a unique country to explore. And the publisher said, you know, we'd love you to come around and apply the same curiosity and format and idea to Australia. And me, being quite silly, said, sure, that sounds like fun. Can I bring my kids? So we ended up traveling for just 6 months around the country, visiting every state, both territories, looking for these unique experiences that would belong on anybody's Australian bucket list.
So we heard a little bit about Australia and this bike ride. So what about Victoria? Sorry, and the bike ride. So what would be were your top experiences in Victoria?
Yeah, so applying that prism, I mean, for me, in order to make the book and to make the project, it had to be unique, it had to be memorable, it had to be something everyone can actually do. I don't believe in writing about experiences that rely on a chance celebrity encounter or something that's just completely out of, you know, you'll need millions of dollars. And it had to make a great story. So when I applied that filter to what's going on in Victoria, I started my first day, my first experience was going to see the Boxing Day Ashes at the MCG. Mm-hmm. And I'm not a massive cricket fan, but the MCG itself is like this temple to sport. Yeah. And I thought, well, there's this great world rivalry, old rivalry between these two nations. What a great way to kind of kick that off. The next day, we went to the old Melbourne jail. Heard about Ned Kelly, and you can see his death mask and do a ghost tour. Like, really great stuff.
And going back to the MCG, I mean, it's a spectacular environment. Did you know anything about cricket at all? Or because being French, I'm not very well versed with cricket.
It's a very simple game. There's only about 10,000 rules.
Yes, 10,000, yes.
I grew up with cricket, so I understood the game. I took my four-year-old, and the one thing you should not do with a four-year-old is take them to day one of a five-day test cricket match, even if the atmosphere is fantastic. We sat in our seats for maybe 15 minutes before she just kind of exploded and had to move and had to do something. Mm-hmm. But in those 15 minutes, we watched David Warner was on 99, and then he was out, and the English supporters went bananas, and then it turned out to be a no ball, and then he came back and he scored a century, which is probably the last great thing David Warner will ever do after the ball tampering scandal.
Probably, yes.
But it was an amazing moment, and it perfectly captured the essence
of... So that's really what you wanted to represent.
Exactly, and so with every story that I write in this book, and it's a book of stories, I'm looking for that essence, that moment when you know that you're doing something really special. I mean, the next chapter was with the street art, you know, in Melbourne.
Mm, the laneways.
Fantastic street art scene. And standing there and seeing, like, one of the two remaining Banksys that exist on this back alley door somewhere. And you go, wow, you know, this is... it's amazing.
And I think what's really well described is also this... a lot of the time there's a historical perspective, so it's not just giving us a list of what to do, but there's some background around it. There's really a lot of information.
Yeah, there's so much. The thing is, there's so much information as to how to travel. You know, you go online, you type into Google, and you go, you can see how you can get from A to B, but you don't always understand why. And this is, despite the fact that it says bucket list in the title, the stories are all about my personal experience, kind of understanding and getting to grips with this country. And with each topic, whether, you know, it's the street art or the gold mine rush, you know, or the barrier reef or whatever it is, I'm trying to understand it. So there is a lot of history. There's a lot of characters, the people that really shape the experiences that you have, and I wanted, you know, anyone who reads this book to basically feel super inspired to want to go out there and explore and also just learn about this country.
So anything in Victoria, so these two were specific to Melbourne, really, the anything that you weren't expected. I know you went to Phillip Island with the penguins.
The penguins, yeah. You know, there were a few too many people for my liking for that particular experience. I know that people come from all over the world just for that. And I'm like, well, you know, you can have a more meaningful penguin encounter when it's just you and a penguin and you're stumbling along, like, say, in Bishano in Tasmania or something like that.
Yeah. When did you go? Did you go in the summer? Or
we were in the summer here in December.
We went there in the winter, and it was actually probably a little more bearable and quite enjoyable, although it was pouring rain for the whole 3 hours.
Yeah,
but it was something I found spectacular, and probably because there wasn't a lot of people.
Yeah, I mean, there were things like the Puffing Billy, the steam train. So really cute, you know, great excursion into the Dandenongs, but you could stick your feet out the carriage, and that to me was the most special thing about it, because really, other than, say, India and some parts in South yes. America, you can't stick your feet out of a carriage of a locomotive going through the mountains, through beautiful forests and stuff. And then shortly, you know, I wrote the chapter up, and somewhere between the production, because pictures all still show people with their feet out, there was an accident, and the train hit a car, and they banned it. And it's like, oh, don't ban the coolest thing that you've got going for you, which is you can stick your feet out the carriage of a train.
So we can't do that anymore.
They're going to bring it back. There's an investigation that's taking an incredibly long time. But hopefully you can stick your feet out in the future.
I was at work.
I was riding my horse.
I was microwaving a watermelon.
My iguanas escaped.
There are lots of reasons why you may have missed your favourite show, but don't worry, because our podcast team has you covered. They'll work through rain, hail and national glitter shortages to bring you the best bits of every show. Visit joy.org.au and click on the podcast tab, or head to the iTunes Australia podcast store and subscribe to your favourite shows for free. Thanks to our podcasters, you'll never feel guilty about missing a show again. Joy.
We're talking all things Australia, and our guest Robin Escrow just published The Great Australian Bucket List. And so Robin's been telling us about some places in Victoria, what to do in Victoria. Were there anything, experiences that did not end up in your book?
Yeah, there were. I mean, I didn't have a lot of time, so I tried to be as efficient as I could. Say the Melbourne Roar and Snore. Which was fantastic, I took my daughter, and it was a lot of fun. You know, it felt like we were in Jurassic Park. You know, the gates close, and you're in the zoo overnight. It's not in the book because it's something you can do all over the country. You know, there'll be one at Taronga in Sydney. Yeah. There'll be, you know, there, and it's going to be in the next book, which is about family travel.
So you had your kids. Was it easy enough to
Did you say kids and easy in the same sentence? I was traveling with a 4-year-old and an 18-month-year-old, and the idea was to kind of research two books on the back of one one journey. And silly us thought, well, the kids will just get into the rhythm of the road, kids don't respect a travel writer's insane schedule, you know, to be at a certain place, to do a certain thing, to write it up right away, to set set up tomorrow's experience. You know, they just, where's the ice cream? You know, I don't want to wear my shoes today. Their interests are somewhat non-aligned.
So they were a little bit of a drawback to your writing.
It more challenging, but at the same time, my daughter features quite a lot in the book. Mm. You know, I went jungle surfing with her in the Daintree Forest, and you know, she's panning for gold at Sovereign Hill, and watching the kangaroos at sunrise on the beach in Cape Willoughby in Mackay. So she adds this amazing enthusiasm and wonder that kids have with them. That, you know, adults, we tend to kind of compare our experiences to what we've had before and go, well, you know, it's not as good as what I expected, because we build up these expectations. But kids don't have any of that. They just live in the now. Mm. So as challenging as it was, I mean, to see her face light up when she's feeding tuna fish in a tuna pen enclosure in South Australia, or, you know, standing beneath a lion in a cage. We're in the cage. The lions are out there in Minata Zoo. Like, you know, it's so much fun. And I hope that some of that fun comes through in the book.
Yeah, no, I think it's definitely, I mean, a lot of it comes through because I was saying about the research and the way it's written as well, not as a checklist, a thing to check before you die, which is a lot of those bucket lists are framed that way, the things you have to do before.
Yeah, and it's a bit rich, and it's you know, the bucket list thing has really blown up and become a little oversaturated. It's only been around since 2007 when the movie came out. Mm. So if you think that before then, anyone who says they had a bucket list is basically lying. It didn't exist, but it so perfectly captured this very powerful human urge to want to see and do things before you kick the bucket. Mm. And, you know, now there's a bucket list for everything. And I know I've had some pushback going, oh, you know, you create these unrealistic goals and expectations for people. You know, they feel like if they don't go to Everest or the Galapagos, you know, their lives will be incomplete. And I don't think that's the case. It should be taken that seriously. Mm. Yeah. I think, you know, it's a cheesy catchphrase for a very powerful concept. Mm. And if you just focus on doing that thing you've always wanted to do in your own back garden, whether, you know, even going to a festival in the city or the restaurant you've always wanted to go to, that's as worthy a bucket list entry as anything.
As anything, yeah. And I think that links back to the way people travel now with Instagram, Facebook, and all those things where they have to, sometimes people put themselves at risk just to take a few pictures, and there's been some death secondary to this. So, and that's kind of trying to put together, you know, tourism, responsible travel. How do you conciliate that?
I was just recently in Bali. Once we wrote this book, we went off to Bali, and I found it to be dysfunctional. Bali in high season. Yeah. You know, there's so much tourism that it's had a detrimental impact on that island and its culture. So everybody who's working is directly trying to get that tourist dollar. They become more desperate. Mm-hmm. They become more crafty, I guess you could say. The pollution is out of control. Mm-hmm. Out of control. The beaches are just completely, like, covered in garbage. Getting around, we had, you know, taxi drivers beating up other taxi drivers, and just to get the fare. Like, it was dysfunctional and really upsetting. And overtourism is, I think, something you're going to be hearing a lot of in the next couple of years. You know, there was this beach in Thailand where they filmed the beach. They shut it down for 6 months to let it rehabilitate, and then they saw just how bad it was, and they've shut it down for good. So you're going to hear overtourism coming up more and more, and this idea of, if you're going to travel, do it responsibly, you know, in the sense of work with companies that have some sort of responsible ethics package involved, about paying people well, about not bastardizing a culture in order so it fits your idea of what it should be. And then you're also going to have the idea of just not going to places such as a Bali and maybe going somewhere else, because it's let it cool off a little bit. You know, let the people reclaim their culture, so that you're not going out there trying to get that Instagram picture of the Ketchak dance at sunset along with 2,000 other tourists. Mm. I think there's it's something I'm acutely aware of as a travel writer, you know, inspiring people to travel. And more, I want to inspire people to travel responsibly.
No, that's great. Were there any places like this in Australia, would you say, you would avoid to go because of that?
Or? I wouldn't avoid it, but I think, like, we're talking about Phillip Island with the with the penguins. Yep. You know, it's a remarkable thing to see hundreds of penguins come out of the water. I mean, absolutely. Monkey Mia in Western Australia, where it's famous because you can feed the dolphins off the beach. So thousands of tourists flock to these places. And what happens is the presence, the sheer volume of people changes that experience. In Monkey Mia, it had a hugely detrimental effect on the environmental impact on the dolphins themselves. So today they still sell the experience, but when you show up, it's very off. I mean, your expectations are, I'm going to see dolphins and I'm going to feed them. What actually happens is you're kept at a far distance. They tell you about the dolphins. They choose four random volunteers, usually adults. So all the kids just start, like, they're devastated. They drop the fish in the dolphin's mouth. They don't touch it, and the dolphin's off, and that's it. And it's over. And it's like, this is great for the dolphins, but don't sell it as a tourist thing. Don't sell it as something you've got to do. They're building a new massive hotel right on that beach. I mean, it blows my mind. You know, with Phillip Island, having stadium seating around watching little penguins come out of the sea. Yeah. And then upselling it so you can be at eye level, and then you can, you know, it's like, okay, I get it. And for people who love penguins, it's a very special thing. But there's more natural ways, or you know, and it's a catch 22. They're trying to make money. They're trying to, you know, there's a lot of agendas going on.
I mean, for Phillip Island, the money goes back in the conservation of the penguins and this area. So it's a good thing, but yes, it can be a little bit.
It's a good thing, but when you stay seated in row, you know, 40, and you're talking about little penguins. They're little. they're not emperor penguins. They're tiny. And, you know, you have this, all the marketing paraphernalia basically gives you the impression that you're looking at a penguin right up in front of you. Can you reach out and touch it? It's like, that's not what's going to happen. And as long as the expectations are aligned with the reality, I don't think anyone will be disappointed. And certainly at Phillip Island, there were a lot of, especially Asian tourists who were loving it. You know, that was the best thing they've ever seen. Maybe people here in Victoria might go all the way there and go, oh, you know what? We had more fun on the koala boardwalk where we saw koala, or, you know, there's a farm there, a working farm that's fantastic, and you can see them shear sheep. And, you know, that might be an experience that that has more impact than the actual penguins.
And I think what your writing does is really giving the opportunity to explore a bit further from the experience because of all this context you give. So you not concentrate just on that experience, because there's so much context, you give people the opportunity to do their own research as well around
that. Exactly. I mean, a lot of the time, the actual experience, that moment, is just an excuse to go. Just get in the car or get on the plane and just go. And, you know, if you're going and you're looking for, say, the quokka selfie in Rottnest Island. I mean, I don't know if you've heard about the quokkas.
No, so what's that? Tell us.
Yeah, so there's marsupials. You know, when I was in Canada, I only knew there's a wallaby and there's a kangaroo, but apparently there's like 12 different types of marsupials. And I heard a paddy melon and I thought it was a fruit. And here we have this quokka, and it's this particularly friendly marsupial rodent type creature in Western Australia off the coast of Perth. You have to cross very rough seas, but it's a very, very popular trip. You go to this island, no cars are allowed, you can't drive on, and you've got these beautiful, there's dozens of beautiful coves and beaches and stuff, but the anchor experience is get the quokka selfie, because this is the only place in the world where you can, this creature will come up to you and you can get that selfie. You know, you're not supposed to touch the creature, and, you know, it's it's kind of in a weird kind of way. Roger Federer just kind of took it off and blew this thing up when he took his quokka selfie. And it's like, well, you know, okay, it's pretty hammy. It's like you get the thing. That's not why you should go to Rottnest Island. You should go there because it's a beautiful place to go to. There's some fascinating World War II history. You can cycle around, you know, find your own private beach. That's why you go to Rottnest Island.
Yeah. So you've explored a lot of marsupials as well, because Narrakoot, I think you went to, and with the giant.
The wombat?
Yes.
Narrakoot, giant marsupials.
Yeah,
we were there the day before a catastrophic fire day. And, you know, they open every day except Christmas and catastrophic fire days, which I thought sounded like something out of a science fiction movie.
Sadly, no.
And it was the next day they closed because of a catastrophic. I think that was the temperature in our car was 40, the outside, it said it was 47 degrees Celsius outside, and I couldn't believe it. So going into those caves was a very cool thing to do.
Literally, on
one of the hottest days of the year.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station, Joy 94.9.
You're on Joy, listening to The Escape Hour with Stefan, and today I'm receiving Robin Escrow. Robin is the best-selling author and travel writer who's just, and we're talking about the Great Australian Bucket List. So we talk about a few places in Australia, in Victoria, a few places around Australia. What is your favourite part of Australia?
I had an amazing time in the Red Centre, at the top end. I thought that they were just like different countries. So that was very interesting travel. I hiked, I did the Larapinta Trail.
Oh, yes.
With this company called World Expedition. So it's not a two-week rugged hike. It's a six-day sleeping in swags. They cook all the food for you. You can have beer and wine at the end of the day. It's the way to do a
run. Did you go there with the kids as well?
No, I didn't bring the kids in there. No, otherwise there'd be a lot of shoulder carrying. Tasmania, I love. I think it's just a beautiful, beautiful part of the world. And the fact that it's an island, off an island, I describe it in the book like a greatest hits, Australia's greatest hits, because you get all the wildlife and it just was so beautiful. South Australia was very surprising to me. Adelaide as a city in Brisbane, I think, you know, there's this idea that these are certainly the impression I got from Australians is that they're somewhat backwater cities, and I get there and I'm like, they are vibrant and there's great food and there's great festivals and such beauty and wine regions around them. I'm like, you know, it's Australia really is blessed.
So you've got a section about the ACT, which is probably not some place that most tourists will consider going when coming to Australia. If you plan a short trip, you probably concentrate on those big centres, you know, the Red Centre, probably Sydney, Melbourne, Brisbane, maybe Perth if you're on your way to Asia. ACT, what shall we do in Canberra?
Well, I think every Australian should go to Canberra. I mean, you owe it to yourself, if you're living in this country, to see how and where the power is managed, you know, the people that make the decisions.
How and where the motions are passed.
Yes, exactly. And so, you know, going just to Parliament, Parliament House, you know, the fact that you can just walk up, they've got kind of a baggage check thing, but it's very, very chilled out, and you walk, and suddenly the next thing you know, I'm walking in Parliament, and I'm walking into the House of Representatives, and I'm walking into the Senate, and it just amazes me that you can do that, because in the White House, you're not going to get near the thing, you know, near the Capitol Hill, you're not going to get near, like, you know, here you can take a hot air balloon. The next morning I took a hot air balloon. They have a wonderful festival every year in Canberra, and the sky is just lit up with balloons, and you can just go right over Parliament House. Really cool. The other thing that I loved in Canberra, and which I think every Australian, it's got to be like a pilgrimage, is the War Memorial. I thought it was fascinating, really well done, really touching. And the anchor there is to hear the Last Post, which is every afternoon they honour a fallen soldier and they tell this story, and they play the bugle, and it's very, very moving and very touching, and just something I think, again, every Australian kind of owes it to themselves to see Parliament House, but to see the War Memorial, and of course you're surrounded by some also fantastic experiences, like the NASA Deep Space Communication Center is a whole chapter about that, that, you know, these unsung heroes of space travel are right here in rural Australia.
And did you really go and watch Question Time?
I tried to, but they weren't sitting, and unfortunately I didn't have the time to sit around
to wait for them to come back.
But you know, in that chapter I explained quite a bit, and you can do a free tour, and they explain, they say, look, you know, everybody thinks of Parliament as Question Time, and especially not only Question Time, but that 30 seconds when there's some drama, some like some shouting or some grand proclamation. And this is like, for the most part, the parties actually cooperate and there's actually governing going on, and you don't really hear that or see that in the news. And
it's not sexy to report. It's not something you report because it's not...
It's not sexy to report any good news, unfortunately,
no,
these days.
Unfortunately, and we're completely biased towards the... we don't remember what went well. We only remember what didn't go well. And talking about that, were there any experiences where you thought, well, that didn't quite go as I expected, and it felt a little bit...
I mean, I built up a reputation over the years as being a thrill seeker and doing some crazy stuff. But it's always very calculated risks. Because I focus on activities that anyone can do, I'm not going to be wingsuit jumping over Mount Everest, you know. And like I've met these guys and all, you know, amazing. I'm the kind of guy who says, okay, they're skydiving, but you're going with a very reputable company that, you know, they do thousands of dives every month and there's never any issues. There you go, you know, helicopter rides. Yeah, you know, the risk is it's got to be your own personal comfort level. For me, you know, the Australian tourism industry is very well run. It's very well managed. There are accidents, very rare. Yes. Unfortunately, you do hear about them and when the plane goes down or something like that, you know, when it's a seaplane or a helicopter or something, a diving accident, you hear about those. You just don't hear about the 99% where there was just somebody's big smile at the end of the day. But for the most part, everything worked out really well. You know, the only hairy moments I've had really have been with the kangaroos jumping off the side of the road when I'm driving at high speed.
I actually hit a kangaroo once, and that wasn't very pleasant.
Yeah, it's not very pleasant, especially for the kangaroo.
It wasn't the kangaroo, I must say. It's a wallaby. That shows my ignorance. But and it happened in the Northern Territory when I went to Litchfield, which you went and you swam in...
Bully Rock Holes, Florence Falls. Yeah, Litchfield. I mean, Kakadu was just like a little bit far, especially with kids, but it's still iconic. I mean, you got to go to Kakadu. Litchfield was beautiful. I mean, the termite mounds, you know, you stop the car and you're like, holy wow, you know, when this tiny little creature builds these massive things.
Absolutely. And it's not something that you see anywhere else in Australia. I think it's really typical of that part of Australia. In Kakadu, I don't know if you did that, but I did a sunrise cruise in the Billabong, and that was quite spectacular as well with the wildlife, and because there's the big focus on wildlife as well.
There's a lot of you know, Australia's got some very unique wildlife. It's kind of like going to Africa, where you're only going to see a wild giraffe and a wild zebra if you're in Africa, and you're only going to see, I mean, the first time we saw kangaroos, I know it's like no big deal, and it certainly became no big deal after a while, but my daughter like chased after this huge bull kangaroo, and we're like, is it dangerous? I don't know, like, it's a kangaroo. And she's chasing after him down a golf course. There's a lot of great wildlife, but you know, there's nothing in here like pet a koala, you know, that's what a lot of international tourists want, is they just want those unique experiences with unique Australian wildlife. Because this book is written for Australians primarily, I took it as a given that you're going to have had a koala bear encounter and a kangaroo encounter, you know, so I'm looking for something a little bit more interesting.
You did go and see had an encounter with Tasmanian devils, though.
Yeah, the devil is a creature all on its own thing. And so it's so sad what's going on with the devils, but they're kind of rebounding. Hopefully they're going to come back. But, you know, my chapter is all about really publicity, PR, because it's like, what a great name for an animal. The Tasmanian devil. I mean, that is awesome. You know, and I say, you know, there's all these other animals. If they had that kind of name, they would also be as famous.
Yeah. We haven't talked about Western Australia much. Mm-hmm. So what would you recommend in Western Australia?
Well, driving up the coast, we drove all the way up to Shark Bay, and then we couldn't go up to the Ningaloo Reef, which is in the book, but I didn't actually manage to get there, and then all the way down south to Albany. Things that I loved were meeting the prince of a micronation, a self-proclaimed sovereign state called the Principality of Hutt River. Thought that was fantastic, a great story. Anyone can show up, you get your passport stamped, you can get a visa, you can mail off something, they've got their own post office. And I thought it would be a story about kind of tax evasion and kind of ego and hubris, but it's an amazing story about a family trying to save their farm. So that was really interesting, and everyone can do that. you know, learned all about climbing of the very big tree. So Margaret River is awesome, but on the way there, there's the world's highest tree climb. Mm. And I thought, in Australia, which is a country full of waivers and liability forms, and you know, here's this tree, you can just go up and climb 75 meters up, and it is high. And it's unbelievable to me that people don't get killed every day on that thing, but nobody ever has. So I was like, you got to put that on the bucket list. So unique. The Carry and Boranap Drive. Again, Margaret River's beautiful region, but you can get wine all over the country, find wine. There's great surfing all over the country. What makes Margaret River unique? And it's the Carry forests and the ability to drive through, have like these amazing road trips through them. And so that's what I focused on.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLB, TIQ community radio station, Joy 94.9.
You're on the Escape Hour on Joy. You're listening to you're with Stefan, and I'm receiving Robin Excrow, a travel writer, Canadian travel writer, who's written all about the great Australian experiences. Robin, we talked about different parts of Australia and what to do. What can we do on the budget?
Well, the book's got experiences that range from very expensive to free. You know. Kind of especially traveling with like young kids, it doesn't really cost that much to jump in the car and say do the Great Ocean Road if you're traveling around this part of the world, or to walk around the inner city and explore the arcades and look at the street art. You know, the museums are fantastic here. I didn't really go into them with the book itself, but there's some amazing things there. A lot of it is just that regional exploring, you know, just going around and seeing what you can find.
So, for somebody that wants to, you know, to replicate some experiences, is there any advice you would give them?
Yeah, so kind of the idea, now that I've kind of explained in the book why we should go to these places, I created a whole online platform to help people get there, and that's AussieBucketList.com. So then the idea is, you read about it, you go, I want to go there, how do I do it? And it literally says at the bottom of every single chapter, start here.
Oh.
It's like, I'm going to make it easy for you. And then you go to the website, and I've got all the links and the costs and the way how to get there and directions and maps and all sorts of stuff to try and make it easier for people to get there.
And if there was one thing you wouldn't go go home from Australia without having done, what would that be?
I would say certainly for any visitor, they really need to see the Red Centre. And the best way that I did that was on the GAN. So I took the train from Darwin, which was a great excuse to explore Darwin, and then down to Adelaide and across the Red Centre. And in fact, we're having a prize giveaway with this book. We're giving away two tickets on the GAN, plus accommodation, plus flights. And it's free to enter at AussieBucketList.com. So the idea is, not only am I trying to say, hey, Australia, you live in this amazing country with all these amazing things. Let me help you kick it off with one of the world's great train journeys.
There are a lot of people that really enjoy train journey. I'm one of them. I haven't done the GAN yet, so that's on my list of things to do as well. I've always found an excuse to fly instead. I've got a question that we usually ask all our guests on the show. When you travel, do you roll or do you fold?
Fold? I throw.
You throw. Yeah, we had a few throw. Maybe yes, I should have.
I'm a folder.
You're a folder? So you, yeah.
Yeah, I've tried the rolling thing. It's just too much work. It takes too much time. I've got a fantastic technique, though, with collared shirts. I've got a YouTube video just typing how to fold a collared shirt when you travel, and you will probably come up against me. And yeah, it's you fold it in, and you get there, you don't need any ironing, and that's what I do.
That sounds like a great tip. So thanks, Robin. If people want to get hold of your book, where can they do that?
Book is available in all bookshops across Australia, all worthy bookshops, go online. It's Booktopia, or you find it at AussieBucketList.com. There's all the links and everything. I'm hoping that this is the book that will inspire your parents or inspire your kids or inspire your mates. It's just the kind of book that people get and go, wow, I had no idea, puts a smile on their face and makes them inspired to travel.
Thanks, Robin. It's been fantastic. Thank you very much for telling us all about those things to do in Australia. I mean, there's so much on our doorsteps, and it's really worth exploring.
Thanks for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.